Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens, second hour. We're in the Summit Responsible Solutions studios. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author. And the dirty word of the day fits in with fall perfectly. Leaf peeping. Leaf peeping. That's L-E-A-F. And a new word, peeping. P-E-P-I-N-G. Leaf peeping is an activity of traveling to view and photograph the changing colors of fall foliage during the autumn months. From brilliant emerald greens to blazing yellows and oranges to bright reds, leaves transform across America and put on a colorful show. Many travel to explore the scenes filled with the lush array of colors. The United States National Park Service reported that leaf peeping is a very popular recreational activity in national parks in the fall season. Although more prevalent, leaf peeping is not exclusive to North America. In Japan, a similar practice exists called momojigari, or koyo, considered the ultimate autumn pastime. Momojigari translates to hunting red leaves. However, momojigari or koyo don't just refer to red leaf maple trees in practice. According to Boutique Japan, but make the catchphrases for all leaf peeping activities. In Finland, the autumn splendor is called ruska, translating to fall foliage. In Finnish, ruska retki is a typical outdoor activity like hiking or traveling to admire the fall colors. And we can have fall too here in October. November and December, the cypress trees are already changing colors. The sycamores are changing colors. We are starting to see fall happening here. Usually it's most apparent in January, but use leaf peeping this week in your conversation.
Yes.
Leaf peeping.
Yes.
Darling, let's go out to the woods and leaf peep.
You better have the definition ready too.
When his eyes get really wide.
Oh, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, let's go wink, wink, do some leaf peeping.
1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. And Lizzie brought in a bag of basil, and it's still going strong, huh?
Well, I'm hoping, yeah, believe it or not. I put my rosemary somewhere, and that all died off. And
uh-oh,
that's my second round, and so I don't know what happened there, but whatever. But yeah, my basil is really kicking, like, big time, and it's really pretty. It's doing very well, so.
How do you use basil?
Usually 99.9% of the time in my meatballs and my spaghetti sauce. I don't really use basil for other stuff. I usually use like my sage and my thyme for other things.
Basil. I love bruschetta. I love that bruschetta too. And tomatoes. So tomatoes. So it's a good fall recipe. Tomatoes and mozzarella cheese and fresh basil. Yum, yum.
Yes.
What other herbs can you be growing right now? You can be growing anise and bay laurel, borage and chives. Chives should be blooming right now if it's been in your garden all year. Coriander and dill, lemon balm and lavender, Mexican tarragon. Oh, I love Bernays sauce. You know, Tony always says to me, don't get saucy with me, Bernays. And mint. How's your mint doing?
You know what? Don't plant mint. Never plant mint, ever. If you do, listen to Teresa, only plant a little bit because we're going on year four of it just randomly picking up, and I pulled the roots.
Your yard must smell so good, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
So, parsley and rosemary, sage, sweet fennel, sweet marjoram, and thyme. Fall is a great time. There's not as much heat. Your herbs will taste better in your savories. A lot of good fall recipes out there. I love cooking with fresh sage and thyme with my turkeys, and so it's mm-hmm. it's just a great great time of the year to grow herbs. I want to give a big shout out to all our new Texas listeners in Big D, Austin, Houston, and Katy.
What?
Getting a great response out there from Texas. So anywhere where you're listening in the world, we thank you for joining in and listening to our podcast. wherever you are, you're listening live. You don't have to miss an episode at all. You can listen live every Saturday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Or you can catch the podcast 24/7 wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, and if you have any questions, ask Teresa. You can also text us. Just text your location and name, and you can just make up a name. But she does need to know at least the location so she can tell you the proper way. And you don't have to be in Florida either. She's that smart.
That's right. You can be a leaf peeper, and I will answer all leaf peeping questions. So we're going to be right back with more of your gardening questions if it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. If you have a gardening question, 1-888-455-2967. That's 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And so C in Winter Haven, I guess that's Winter Haven,
yes,
said, Lizzie, you need to make pesto with your basil and plant mint in your grow box. And I think that will work. And
yes.
So you just got to keep, you know, just keep an eye on them. It's one of the things that, you know, it's not invasive, but if it likes where it's growing, it's just going to be really aggressive.
Yes.
And it'll grow everywhere. So make sure you like it before you plant it. I'm not a big mint fan, but I do love the chocolate mint.
Yes.
I do.
And you guys gave me some very beautiful chocolate mint that's still popping up all over the place. So thank you for that. I think of you and Tony every time I pull it out of the ground. I'm like, these biscuits.
It smells like a little Girl Scout cookie.
It really does. And, you know, I mean, I joke about my mint, but seriously, like, I mean, I really am enjoying the mint being everywhere. So
it does smell good.
It does smell very good.
When you walk on it.
Yes.
And so and the dogs, does it get on the dogs? Do the dogs smell minty fresh?
Oh, we have one female boxer, and she's our... a female dog word, but she's very sassy, and so she goes around. She actually smells the mint. I'm like, what is wrong with you? But I'm like, good
aromatherapy for the boxer. They sometimes need it.
Well, she needs it. She needs it.
So Carol in Tallahassee, she's texted me and she says, "Do you have to water hydrangeas all winter? I seem to lose them over the winter, and I love them so much. We don't have an irrigation system." Okay, so. Here's the thing, Carol, about hydrangeas. They are beautiful. They are not, I would say, unless they're established really, really well and for a long time, they're not drought tolerant. They like moist soils, so really organic amended soils. That they, if you don't have an irrigation system, it would be better to have them in the shade. But, Carol, they go dormant in the winter. So I hope you're not throwing them away because it looks like they're losing their leaves and hydrangea leaves. Really turn beautiful. Oak leaf hydrangeas, which are native to Florida, they turn a brilliant red in the fall, and they're just gorgeous. But they lose all their leaves, and hydrangeas become sticks in the wintertime. That's not dead, though.
Ah.
And so it's going to come back again in the fall. So I hope you're not throwing away your dormant hydrangea. It's nothing you're doing. It's just going to go dormant. And that's a good thing because they're going to come back bigger and better, and they will bloom lovely for you in the spring. So what I would do with those hydrangeas, especially if you have plants that go dormant here in Florida, and that's kind of unusual because, you know, you don't think of Florida as having a winter season, but we do. Then you're going to want to surround it with evergreen shrubs or shrubs that will, you know, kind of take the focus away from your dormant hydrangea, kind of like gardenia, something that's evergreen all year round that can take the cold weather, you know, gardenias, and then also, Japanese yew, Harrington yews, cardboard plants, kuntis, something that's green that will be a different leather. Mahonia is gorgeous, and Mahonia does really well in North Florida, Tallahassee area. Mahonia, and it's got holly-shaped leaves, which are kind of dangerous. This is something you want to plant Mahonias underneath your daughter's window if she likes going out at night and skipping out on you. You can plant Mahonia, and you will know every time when she's leaving the house. But
and,
it has
And bougainvillea.
Bougainvillea, too. That's another great one. Yes, it is. And but the Mahonia has blueberries on it, really blueberries. So it's really quite striking plant. And it does well here in Central Florida and North Florida. And so it's just a great choice. And so, Carol, just check it out. Try hydrangeas one more time. They do need water when it is too dry. So I would say when the temperatures are over 75, 80 degrees, you're going to want to at least water them at least twice a week. But I would amend the soil of the holes. They like acidic soil. Okay, so the pH around 5.5 would be good. And you can put down espoma acidifier on it, and that will keep the soil pH for your blueberries and your hydrangeas and your azaleas down low, and that'll be good for them. Because when they're in the right pH, they're going to be able to absorb fertilizer and nutrition better. But then also, too, let it go dormant. And if you think it's dead, take your fingernail or your file or your nail clipper, your keys. I use my keys a lot because they're always in my pocket. And scrape back a little bit of the layer of the stem and see if it's green underneath. And if it's green underneath, it's just going dormant and it's going to be just fine. And it'll come back again the next year. So that would be great. And so I appreciate the text message, Carol. That's wonderful. They don't come back in the spring, or if they do, they stay small, very small, all summer. Then you're going to need to fertilize them. So, again, check the pH, Carol, and you want to make sure it's like about 5.5. Fertilize it with acidic fertilizer, and you could use an azalea fertilizer, a gardenia fertilizer, but that will be it. So you want to make sure it's getting, you know, the nutrition it needs. Amend the soil, fertilize it on a regular basis, and then you can go ahead, and I think it'll do much better for you. Let's go to Bill in Lake Placid. Good morning, Bill. How can I help you?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
I have a question about basil.
Okay.
I have two basil bushes that are over a year old, and they've grown high and thin instead of wide and flat, and they still produce great basil. But I have these white cottony patches on the underneath side of the basil leaf. And it's, when I scrape it away, there's no insect underneath. I don't see any insects anywhere, but I got white patches on almost half of the leaves.
Okay, so it may be, you're not going to see the insect if it's scale. Okay, so if you look at scale, how you can tell if it's scale is you take it and just squish it. And if you see some brown ooze coming out of it, that's it's alive. Okay, so you're not really going to see the insect as much with scale, but you want to use a oil, neem oil on it, okay? And just keep cutting it so it doesn't get too big on you. And so neem oil for your scale problem. It'll take care of the issue right now. Now, it could also be aphids or mealybugs, and neem oil will take care of that too as well.
Oh, okay. And if I wash that off, is it okay to eat?
Yeah. Yeah, you can eat it if you would like to. Neem oil. I would make sure it's watered really well before you use it so that it's, you know, a few weeks out. But then you could also, if you see bugs on your basil because it grows back so fast, you can just clip it off and throw it away and not use any chemicals.
Okay,
so just clip them off. Then the bugs aren't there anymore. I would have the garbage bag right there with you so you don't drop them through your yard and they come back again and go, boy, we had to walk all the way back over here to the basil.
Right.
So have a bag there. Okay. You can just toss them in there. All right?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bill. Thank you for listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. You know, so you don't always have to use chemicals when you have an insect issue. I would just say if they're on a leaf or if they're on a branch, clip that off, pop it in, a bucket of water if you've got it with you, or a bag, and then you don't have the insect's gone.
Well, I've noticed, and I don't know if this is factual, but the neem oil, remember I had like some type of like, I don't know, mold or something, fungus growing on like my bell peppers and stuff, and so you'd suggested to use neem oil, and so I did what you said, and it did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was going out. I can't remember so many few days.
You got to read the instructions. Yeah. I would say at least a week to 10 days afterwards.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Now, if you have an issue, an insect issue on your vegetables, there are products. Safer has a whole line of them that is used for edibles. Make sure it just says on the label, read the label. Mm-hmm. The label's the law, but it will tell you if you can use it on fruit and vegetables and edibles. So you want to make sure you're looking at that.
Yeah. And what I do is like, I'm not suggesting, I'm not a medical person, but what I like to do is even if I buy stuff at the grocery store, I like to bring it home and use like a ivory soap.
Yeah.
And rinse off of my...
Washing your fruits and vegetables is always a good idea. You never know who's been handling them. And also, too, they got dirt on them. You know, my dad would grow up in North Carolina and on a tobacco farm. His dad grew tobacco. And they would just take the tobacco leaves and they have big tobacco hornworms on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would pour gasoline over the leaves. And they didn't wash the leaves once they sent them away. They didn't wash them.
Oh my gosh.
And I know when they got to the tobacco, wherever they make, you know, cigarettes and stuff, I know they didn't wash them.
Right. Well,
you know?
I'm sure that that didn't matter after they added other stuff.
Okay. You know, but I just, he never smoked. And that was one of the reasons why, because those big tobacco worms.
Well, that's because he got to touch it and he got the nicotine through touching it. That's why your dad spent so much time in the tobacco field. I'm just kidding.
And so, no, tobacco hornworms, they're huge. Have you ever seen them?
No, but I've seen hornworms because I've had them take
they're out. Huge. They're huge.
They're scary.
They are scary. They're stuff nightmares are made of. But we don't grow tobacco, so that's, you know, a good thing. All right. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. What can you be doing in your lawn right now? What you could be doing is, and so many people have their landscapes done by landscapers, the maintained people that just come in and they just cut everything. Everything's all nice and straight. And, you know, a lot of times plants don't need to be cut. You're cutting the flowers off. You should not be cutting your azaleas, your camellias, your hydrangeas. Nothing should be cut back this time of the year. But your ligustrum trees, they keep cutting them in the nice, you know, shaped lobe shape. But some of you don't even cut them at all. And this is the time of the year, cut them twice a year, once after they bloom and then once in September, and you'll have a really lovely flowering springtime with them. They are so fragrant. The bees love them, and you'll have nice flowers on your ligustrum tree. Most people don't realize that ligustrums have flowers or that viburnums have beautiful flowers, and it's because they're just cut way too much. I was at a client's house yesterday that has a big, huge Brazilian pepper. And I'm talking huge. It has to be at least 20, 25 feet wide and about 15 to 20 feet tall. And it's in full bloom right now. And there were so many bees. Literally, you could just hear the buzzing.
Mm.
Just the buzzing, buzzing, buzzing of the bees. And I'm not a big fan of Brazilian peppers, but they're beekeepers. And so it doesn't, you know, Brazilian pepper doesn't have a really sweet honey like the orange citrus trees do with the citrus flowers, but it just attracts bees. And so if you have a Brazilian pepper in your yard, cut it down. But, you know, this is a time of the year that the bees are still going after those flowers. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. We're going to be back with your phone calls and text messages Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We're in our final half hour. If you missed any of today's show, you can go on to iHeartRadio and you can download it. You can also subscribe to Audio Boom. Anywhere where you listen to podcasts, you can subscribe. And that way, when it drops, when the podcast drops, you'll get notice of it. And we appreciate that. Let's go to Jan in Leesburg. Good morning, Jan. How are you?
Hi, Teresa. I heard you mention the mealybugs, and I'm having a problem with my hibiscus.
Yes.
And being, in Florida for 10 years, I haven't really grown hibiscus until now when I've got this problem of the white patches on there and those little potato-looking bugs that are the mealy bugs.
Yeah.
And we took it to the extension office, and Clayton, the master gardener there, told us it was mealy bugs and to treat it with the neem oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. Nothing happened. We had our lawn service come in, and they put on Tandem, which helped.
except it went, the bugs went to the other trees. And now I've got it on four trees instead of one.
Okay.
Should I cut my 15-foot hibiscus down so I can better control it or leave
yes.
it until they come back?
I always recommend, Jan, it's a great question. I always recommend in February, March, as you're coming out of springtime, any winter damage or freeze damage off your hibiscus, take them down to 3 to 4 feet tall. And then in August, cut them down to 3 to 4 feet tall. So go ahead now, and you can just cut them down to a height that you like and let them, they'll have plenty of time to harden off before the winter time. But I want you to look at good air circulation. Okay, so are they close to the house? Where do you have them in your yard?
They're on the side. They're probably a good 20 feet away from the house.
Okay, 20 feet away from the house. And there's just a lot of, are they doing as much damage so that you just notice them? Or are they really declining or sickly? Or you just see a few mealybugs?
Yeah. There's almost no leaves on the first one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you got to take control. So, yes, I would use an insecticide. If your landscape company's taking care of it, that's fine. But cut them down, yes, go right ahead. Not a problem. They will spring right back up again. I would not cut them past the 1st of October, though. So you got to do it in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. The gardener told me in the extension office that there's like a scale of most hardy, that the red is the hardiest of the hibiscus, and then the pink, and then the yellow is the least hardy.
Yeah.
And he recommended getting the native hibiscus rather than ones that you can buy in the store. Have you heard that?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right.
No.
My red one is perfect, but the other ones, the pink and the yellows, are almost gone.
Right. Well, they may be a little bit more susceptible to the insects, but it also could be where they are in the line. The insects are just making their way through the row of hibiscus, you know. I would say yes to that if you had a pink hibiscus that was declining and the red looked really good and then the yellow was declining. But if it's starting on one end and working its way through, then, yeah. Yeah, no. Okay.
It skipped the red.
Did it skip the red totally?
It did.
Oh, totally. My goodness. That's interesting. I think it's anecdotal, the leaves, I don't think the mealybugs are looking at what color the flowers are.
Okay. Like, we don't like this color.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Teresa.
You're welcome. Thank you. Great question. I'm not denying that it could be possibly true, but I've seen all hibiscus, including red, freeze right down to the ground.
Yes. Definitely.
So it just depends on how the coldness, you know, of the winter time.
And speaking of coldness, because I did this last year and some of our listeners listened and they were very happy, go ahead and order your freeze cloth
yes.
now.
Frost blankets, order
frost
it
blankets,
now.
Yeah. What are they looking for exactly, Teresa?
Well, they go to their garden center and say, where are your frost blankets? And you can buy it in a roll. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the nurseries will have it where you can just purchase as much as you want and they already have it on a roll and they'll just measure it out and then cut it. But you can also order it online and get a box of it. And what's good about frost blankets is you can just dry them and put them away for next year. So once you buy it, you don't have to buy it again and again and again.
Yes, and if you don't like have a measuring tape, what I do is I walk, so I do my feet in front of each other.
Yeah.
And then when I go and I ask for something, or I stand next to it and I find out where it is on my leg
yeah,
or my
yeah,
hip,
yeah.
and then I go and I'm just like, look, okay, let me count this out right here, and then I walk it.
Yep.
And show them. And then I also go, okay, up to my hip is how tall they are. And then they can do a measurement that way.
Sure. And because one of the things about frost blankets is that if we have a freeze and you only find out like a couple of days beforehand, we got the freeze coming, the frost blanket's all gone. It's all sold. You know, people run down there. So get it now. Now you have it. The first freeze is probably going to be in November, late November, Thanksgiving time, early September or early December. But the really hard times are going to come in January.
Now, I've seen that there's a couple different types. What should they specifically be looking for in it? Or
well, all frost blankets should look alike.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't, there's not a varying degree of width. So it should all be the same width. It looks like the interfacing of a collar.
Okay.
So that stiff white that you can see through.
Yes.
And but it allows sunlight to get through. It allows water to get through. But it's you don't have to take it off every day.
That's
if you use the boxes, if you use blankets and sheets, you're going to have to take them off every day so that the water can get through and the sunlight can get through.
See, that's where being a Floridian, it's not that so much that we're lazy, but it's like, we have to go out now, and then we don't have time. We got to get to work. We got to get up. We got
to
do this.
Right. You don't have time to
forget
to take it
about
off.
It, where the frost blankets work perfect for us.
Right. And you never want to use plastic. Plastic is where it's going to freeze, and it, you know, I just don't like using plastic. If it touches the leaf, it's going to damage the leaf. So the frost blanket is the best thing to use, and it's a good time of the year to do it. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. Right now, you can still give your poinsettias a cut. You can cut them back and get them the height they want. You can start putting boxes over them at night, so that they don't absorb any light, and that's going to turn the leaves red. So that's going to be really good. You also can start putting your bulbs into the refrigerator for 16 weeks now, so that you have some pretty spring bulbs for your garden. And now you can just put them into your barrel. You do not want to place them in with fall apples or any kind of palm, you know, fruits. So put them in a separate drawer from your apples, so that they will start to grow for you. They get the chill hours.
We might have to come back and revisit what you just said about the bulbs in the fridge.
Yeah, we'll do that next week. Okay, super. Next, if we don't have we're not able to fertilize in most counties and cities October 1st, I'm going to be back and talk to you about when you can fertilize, but the most important thing you do before you fertilize. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We have just a little bit of time left. 1-888-455-2967. I want to say thank you to C in Winter Haven. He said his mother used to grow up in Georgia, and she picked cotton. She said they used arsenic to kill boll weevils on it. And he says he loves Brazilian pepper honey. So, that's great. Let's go to Joe in Orlando. Good morning, Joe. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning, Teresa. Thank you for taking my call. I talked with you before some months ago. I have 7 mature crepe myrtles that are probably 30, 35 years old. I stopped cutting on them 20 years ago, so they're very tall. And they look very anemic. I have no blooms at all. One of the smaller ones has bloomed this year, but none of these others have bloomed. And my neighbor across the street who has cut his back, he has no blooms either. I mean, he has lush vegetation on the from where the cuttings were. But he has no blooms on his crepe myrtle either. And I didn't know what was going on, whether I should cut these puppies down and start over or what.
No, I actually think the problem is this year, Joe, is the drought that we had this winter and spring. We did not get a good rainfall or any rainfall at all this spring and winter. And it really, really affected the trees and flowering. So I think that's one of the issues. Did they bloom last year for you?
They did, yes.
Okay. So I'm going to chalk it up to the weather and kind of say, let's see what they do this next winter time. But then also, too, you might want to go ahead when we can fertilize, go ahead and put down some fertilizer for them. Do you fertilize your yard? Your lawn? Do you do the lawn? And are they close to your lawn area?
Well, they sit back off the lawn. I mean, they're probably 12 feet from where the yard stops. So you got border grass and stuff like that. Then they sit back closer to the house.
Okay, I would probably give them a good fertilizing since they're so tall and so old. You know, I would probably put down 3 to 4 pounds of fertilizer. 666-888-1010 and sprinkle it around
okay,
the seven
well, I
trees.
666 and yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah. I think it's more the weather that we
well,
did not
I
get.
I have a shallow well, and I run that twice a year. I mean, when we're in the summer, it runs, on Wednesday and Saturday.
Right.
So I've gotten no problem with getting water to them. So I still don't understand. I mean, I just wanted to pass that on. That
no.
They are getting water.
I appreciate that. Then the only other thing I can tell you is it's Mother Nature, and sometimes trees take a break. And so if they bloom prolifically last year, try putting the fertilizer down and seeing what they do next year.
When should they be fertilized then?
Go ahead and start doing it in October. Just give them a good dose in October and then do it again in the springtime, February, March next year.
And what do you recommend per tree?
I would follow the recipe, or not the recipe, but the instructions on the fertilizer label.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Joe.
Now we
Great
had,
question.
Now, we had a listener. His name is Keith from Melbourne, and he wanted to know, he has an avocado tree that's 5 to 6 years old. It's about 8 foot tall. Also has a mango tree. I can't remember, about the same year. Uh-huh. And fertilizing. When do you fertilize avocado trees, and when are you going to fertilize your mango trees?
Okay, so you can go ahead and fertilize your mango trees in the springtime, avocados in the springtime. Fruit trees need to be fertilized on a regular basis, okay? So every 3 to 4 months, you should be putting fertilizer down, depending on the size of the tree. Again, following the label instructions, you can put down a fruit tree fertilizer. Sunnyland has a great one for avocados and citrus, and just follow the labels. But the older it gets, you know, the more fertilizer you need to put down, and you need to do it properly. So follow the label. I would do it spring, summer, and fall, and you'll get some good results there that way. Okay, there's no reason to fertilize during the winter time. You don't want to encourage, especially your mango tree. It's you don't want to encourage any new growth when it could get frozen. So just fertilizing your fruit trees every 3 to 4 months. They need to be done on a consistent basis and with the right amount. Let's go to thank you for the call. I appreciate it. So Scott in Palm Bay, how can I help you?
Hi, I think you just answered the one question. I have a Barbados that hasn't been flowering, or very little flowers, no fruit on it this year.
Uh-huh.
And we've been really, really dry, and I just caught the tail end as I was talking to Lizzie.
Yeah.
But I also have a question about azaleas. When is a good time to feed them?
Feed them, again, you want to fertilize and take care of your plants 3 months before a stressful period. It takes about 3 months for the plants to absorb the fertilizer and put it to good use. So right now, the azaleas, you can go ahead and in October fertilize them again. And then in the springtime, you know, February, March, fertilize them every 3 to 4 months or whatever the label says. Sometimes the label will tell you every 6 months. So it's whatever fertilizer you're using. I would use a acidic fertilizer on your azaleas. That way, if you do not have them in the right pH, they will still be able to absorb the fertilizer. So, azalea fertilizer. Okay?
Thanks. I have an azalea that has been blooming all summer.
Yeah.
I talked to you earlier. I cut down some of my azaleas. They stopped blooming, so I squared them off some. But the other ones just kept blooming and blooming. I called you about it because I wanted to cut them back. And you said, well, if it's flowering, why do you want to cut it back? So I let it go. And now it's got these long, straggly growths.
Okay.
Still got some flowers on it. I'd like to. They're actually growing up into my miniature. I have a small tree. I forget the name of it is right now.
Okay.
But so I got to cut off some of those longer shoots.
Sure, you can cut those back any time of the year.
Oh, good. And it'll still bloom okay.
So what we're talking about is cutting it back drastically where it cuts all the blooms off. You're taking a foot to 2 feet off of it. You want to do that after it flowers, not during the flowering period. But you can cut any stragglers off anytime you want.
Great, great. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Scott. Thank you for calling in and listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I teased before the break that what should you do before you fertilize anytime? And one is to get a soil test. A soil test before you fertilize anytime. You may not have to put down nitrogen. You may not have to put down potassium. And so you want to make sure that you get a soil test so you can put down exactly what your plants need. And the Extension office has a great soil test kit that you can get. Send it off. You can order it online. It's called soiltestkit.com. And just put soil test kit in Amazon and it'll pop right up. And it's a great, great program. And it'll tell you what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to save money.
Right.
You're going to save hundreds of dollars a year.
Yeah.
if you don't need to fertilize.
And they also can contact Dana Vinrick over in D-Land if you're in this area.
Quality green specialist. He can test your soil for you, and that's a great way. Mm-hmm. We love Dana, and Quality Green Nursery is just such a fantastic nursery. We're going to have Dana on next week, mm-hmm. and he's going to be answering questions. And yes, soil testing is very important.
Yeah, give him a call. He'll let you know the price and whatnot, and you guys can get that taken care of.
And then that way, because, I mean, people just, you know, be fertilizing and putting down the nitrogen, phosphorus, and you may not need it. And if the plants don't need it, it gets wasted. It leaches out and causes algae blooms, gets into our stormwater drains. Not a good thing. So you want to do that. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. We just have a few more minutes, and I wanted to give you this. So you want to make sure that your orchids, okay, so your orchids, we're going to go starting going into the season where we're going to get 20 degree temperature drops as we get into fall. Now's the time to fertilize your orchids, okay? And again, follow the instructions on whatever fertilizer you buy for it, for your orchids, and get it done now. That way, when your plants start to bloom, they have the nutrition they need, and it'll encourage them to bloom. When we have a 20-degree temperature drop or a 20-degree temperature rise, that's what sets the orchids off, and it starts the blooming season. So we appreciate that. Thank you to all our callers today. Lizzie, we have great callers.
Oh, we have the best listeners.
All over the world.
The calls, the texts, emails. You guys rock.
You do. And if you'd like to send me an email question and I can answer it online for you, you can text me or email me at teresa.watkins@live.com. If you'd like to receive the newsletter, and Nancy, I got your email, so I appreciate that. I'm going to check on it, make sure you get the newsletter. And it's free. It's called In Your Backyard. I talk about what's currently going on, what you could be doing in your yard. I have my design tips. I have what to do in your yard for the month and in your landscape. And then also, too, landscaper malpractice, how to know when to fire your landscaper. Mm-hmm. Lizzie, I got a doozy for October.
Oh, I'm excited.
I just went and I said, you have to excuse me, but I have to take a picture of your yard. And it's not for a good thing. And I got their permission to use it. So I appreciate that. And so landscaper malpractice, and then a list of how to contact all our sponsors and everything. So we do appreciate that.
I'm pretty excited about I know this is early, but the Peterson's Nursery Rose Cell. It's not until next year, but I'm still so excited about this.
Exactly. And I forgot to mention, Lizzie, you have a post in, you also submit to the newsletter, and we talk about what's going on in your yard and life in the garden area for you. So we loved reading that and seeing all your turkeys. We have pictures of Gerald. Is he going to make it to Thanksgiving? We'll see. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
If you missed any of the show and you'd like to go back and catch it, go to betterlawns.com. That's betterlawns.com to listen to all of our podcasts.